Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Tuesday, April 11th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Pet Day.
Aww, Ruby got a bath today.
Oh, well, that was sweet.
Yes.
Macy didn't. In fact, she needs one. She's been playing in the mulch. April 11th dedicates the day to pets who may not always get the companionship and attention they so need and deserve. While loving our pets is something we do every day, the observance encourages us to help orphaned pet companions, improves their health and enhances their opportunities for adoption. So here's to your Ruby, Melody, my Macy, and all the pets out there who love us, how we should love each other unconditionally.
Aww. Well, isn't that special?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, little Ruby had her bath today, and she's been napping all day, so I should probably give her a bath every day, and that way she naps all day long.
Poor Ruby.
Oh, I know. Well, gold didn't nap today. It was up $12.70. We're holding that 2,000 level, $2,005. Silver was up 19 pennies at $25.15. Platinum was up 2 at $1,004. Palladium was up $31 at $1,500. And 29. The USDX was down 0.37 at 102.16. Crude oil was up 166 at 81.40. So, yeah, the USDX was 101 last week, and now it's moving back up, but still down today, but still over 102. So, the paper markets today, let's see. The Dow was up 100 points at 33,684. S&P was basically unchanged at 4108. NASDAQ was down 52 points, 12,031. European markets were all positive. Not a whole lot, though. I guess, yeah, not a whole lot. The major three, the DAX, FTSE, and the France's, they all up under 1%. Shanghai was negative, but barely. 10-year yield, 3.42%. Natural gas, up 2.30%. And that is 2.222. I think we're going to talk a little bit later on this program about how the IMF chief economist is warning banks are in a more precarious situation, creating risks for global growth. How about that, Dave? I think we're going to talk about that as
yeah,
we see them cut the GDP forecast. But before
you know, can I just say something real quickly?
Sure.
Before we get to your other news, that
sure.
going back to treasuries for a moment, the
10-year
3.43, we now have the three-month yield, 90-day treasury bill, 5.04%. So what is that, 160 basis points roughly above the 10-year, and that yield curve inversion is signaling a coming recession. I mean, it's just flashing neon right now. So we'll see where that takes us.
Which one was that, Dave?
The three month.
Three month
at 5.04. Yeah, the 2 year still at 4.03. I mean, that's still a significant chunk above.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't do anything for 2 years. If you're going to do anything, do it for 3 months. That's kind of a deal.
Indeed.
For 3 months.
So that's
a lot can happen in 3 months. A whole bunch could happen. 5% ain't shabby in today's world. If you believe government, if you trust the government. Big banks' deposits actually have plunged. They haven't increased. This was the lead story coming from Pam and Russ Martins. They reported in today's Wall Street on Parade newsletter that 25 largest U.S. banks have lost $700 billion in deposits between April 13th of 2022 and March 29th of this year. And when you include all U.S. domestically chartered commercial banks, the total rises to $970 billion. You may as well just say a trillion.
Yeah.
And so in other words, the largest 25 U.S. banks account for nearly three quarters of the run on deposits over the past year. But as the Martins and we lament to read the media headlines, you think that since the banking upheaval began last month, you'd think that these largest banks have been beneficiaries in terms of deposit inflows. For example, they point to a March 13 Financial Times headline that read, "Large U.S. banks inundated with new depositors as smaller lenders face turmoil." The subheading was even more questionable, reading, "Failure of Silicon Valley Bank prompts flight to the likes of J.P. Morgan and Citi." On March 25th, CNBC ran a similar article about deposit inflows to the big banks, which we use as a basis of one of our stories on this program. Its first paragraph read, "The surge of deposits moving from smaller banks to big institutions, including J.P. Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo, amid fears over the stability of regional lenders, has slowed to a trickle in recent days." And that's what CNBC had learned, Dave.
Yeah, this is quite alarming in a couple of different aspects. I mean, the Martin's analysis is based on the Federal Reserve's weekly H8 report, which shows the assets and liabilities of commercial banks in the U.S., including deposits, plus sort of confirming deposit information at the FDIC. Now, this coming Friday is where the rubber will meet the road. That's when the too big to fails, like J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo, are scheduled to report their earnings for the first quarter of this year. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs on Tuesday, and Morgan Stanley the next day. We should all pay close attention to these reports for any sign of misleading and disingenuous numbers from both the mega banks and, now it appears, some of the media that cover them. Presumably, the two articles that the Martins referred to today just resulted from a lack of due diligence by these media companies. But, you know, I say that kind of with tongue in cheek. When they're initially reporting about these large transfers coming from the smaller and mid-sized banks to the too big to fails, and then we're finding out a couple of weeks later it was just the opposite in a huge extent, to a huge extent, we've got to, I think, pay a little bit closer attention. Anyway, thanks again to the Martins for their critical investigatory and reporting talents, Melanie.
Well, you know, it's funny when you read the headlines like that. That's what most people just do. They read the headlines and they don't bother reading or going any further and so forth. So, you know, they see the headlines and that's what they make their decisions on. So it's, you know, I think more and more, because there's so much information on the internet, everything is the headline, because that's what people read anymore. Right? Yeah. They'll read the headline and maybe the first paragraph.
Yeah.
Which usually the first paragraph is just a repeat of what the headline will say.
Yes. Yeah. And it's equivalent to what we're seeing on TV.
Yeah.
Breaking news at, you know, pick your station. And it's, you know, a 30-second lead in, and maybe they go back to it to dig down a little deeper. Maybe they don't.
Yeah.
This 24-hour news cycle is leaving more and more to be desired. Sorry.
And so that's the point. It leaves the people very uninformed, and that's really, to me, the agenda behind it. Yes. Why should people be informed? They can't be manipulated if they're informed. They can't be divided. You know, most people, yes. So there's much more to it than that. IMF. The IMF released its weakest global growth expectation for the medium term in more than 30 years. The D.C.-based institution said that 5 years from now, global growth is expected to be around 3%, and this is the lowest medium-term forecast in an IMF World Economic Outlook since 1990. It's hard to believe 1990. It was that long ago. Oh, wow.
That was a good decade.
It was. The weaker growth prospects stem from the progress that economies like China and South Korea have made in increasing their living standards, as well as slower global labor force growth and geopolitical volatility. That's a mouthful. In the short term, however, the IMF expects global growth of 2.8% this year, 3% in 2024, and they just keep lowering them. How many times have they lowered it so far? Several times.
Let's count the ways.
The anemic outlook reflects the tight policy stances needed to bring down inflation, the fallout from the recent deterioration in financial conditions, the ongoing war in Ukraine, and growing geoeconomic fragmentation. So the U.S. economy, they see expanding by a lousy 1.6% this year, and the Eurozone growing by 0.8%. That's a contracting by 0.3%, Dave.
Yeah, China's expected to increase by 5.2% this year. India by 5.9%. The Russian economy, which contracted by more than 2% last year, is seen growing by 0.7% in 2023. And again, the IMF says its forecast assumes that the recent financial sector stresses are contained. Not sure.
And you know what happens exactly when you assume. You know what happens when you assume.
Yep. Be very careful. Don't take that for what it is. Just look and see what they mean by that. And, listen to folks like us. Telling you what's really going on there, and hopefully you have a clearer picture of what you ought to be doing with your money. Now, the pressures in the banking sector have dissipated somewhat in recent weeks. In my mind now, with this latest Wall Street on Parade showing, $1 trillion in deposits leaving banks, I'm not so sure. Higher interest rates raised by central banks around the world to bring down stubbornly high inflation, we know, have been hurting companies and national governments, especially those with higher level of debt. And most notably, or more notably anyway, the report warns a hard landing, particularly for advanced economies, has become a much larger risk. Anyway, they expect the global inflation, headline inflation, to drop from 8.7 to 7% this year. Energy prices continue coming down, presumably, in Europe, which we'll talk more about next.
And you know what? It's funny. I mentioned assume. I mean, assumes, that's not something you want the IMF to assume, you know? It's like, what, they don't know? They can't? But anyway, you'd think those guys would be able to have a better idea, which they do. I guess they just don't want to admit to it and so forth. But and they should never use the word assumes. Anyway, they should be able to, if they think it's going to be better because of the banks and everything being better, then they should state that and explain the reasons why instead of just assuming. Anyway, I'll get off on that. Just another reminder, premiums on Silver Eagles, you're looking at $15 over spot now for Silver Eagles. They've been up, $3 in the past month on wholesale premium side. Our price is still the same. We didn't increase our prices, so you're paying $40 for a Silver Eagle. So don't wait for it to get higher. And there are other products out there. So I was a little shocked, though, when I saw that today, how they just went up $1 overnight. We're talking about perhaps lower prices for Europe. I'm not so sure about that, particularly since Russia is part of OPEC and they're cutting back production. So I don't know how it's really going to work for Europe, Dave. But it says that they talk about that the price caps, the energy price caps that the U.S. placed on Russia is beginning to have an impact on their income. Russia oil and gas revenues dove by 45% in the first quarter as its deficit exploded due to the cost of war. The average price for Russia's Urals grade crude oil was 47.85 a barrel in March, down from 89.05. In a sign of economic stress Russia faces, the ruble suffered its worst week of the year, hitting its lowest level against the dollar just since April of 2022. And, of course, last year we saw global oil prices were soaring. We had $5 for a gallon of gas. So it'll be interesting to see how the OPEC cuts affect that, Dave. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah. It will be interesting. Now, in the past, Europe's EU countries have gotten a larger portion of their oil from Russia, and not from OPEC Plus per se. Still,
but isn't Russia part of OPEC though, right?
Yeah, they are, but the oil that is flowing through, like Gazprom and what have you, is Russian oil that's going to Europe largely, to the bigger Russian countries. I mean, they're the biggest Russian buyer of crude, so I'm not sure. This is all going to lead like you, Melody. You know, there are a number of factors in play here, and that makes it really difficult to figure this one out.
Well, I hear the music, so that's telling us we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. As I mentioned earlier, Silver Eagles, their premiums, wholesale premiums are soaring. So if you want them, you better get them. But, Dave, I think the most ridiculous thing I saw today, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who buy into it, where Bitcoin is going to go to $10 million.
Oh, my Lord.
And I got a bridge in Florida that I'll sell you for. I mean, are you kidding me? If Bitcoin goes to $10 million, that means gold is going to go to $50 million. I mean, come on. Who are these people? And what do you think is actually happening if Bitcoin, where's that money coming from? Remember, it needs that money going in there. Jeez, Louise. You know, I had to struggle when they were recommending that it would go to 100 grand. I was going to 10. Do you buy that, Dave?
Do I buy a Bitcoin?
No. Do you buy it's going to 10 million?
No, I, you know, frankly, I don't pay that much attention to that area these days.
I don't either.
I just, you know, look at just the pricing, but not any of the underlying news, because I just think it continues to be just la-la land thinking.
Well, I agree with you, but I find it fascinating. What's sad is so many people buy into it.
Yeah,
and, you know, they buy it, and that's what's helped pushing it higher.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's crazy stories like the one you're talking about that,
yeah.
Lead unwitting investors to make that jump.
Who did I just see today put a whole bunch of money into... Oh, the Winklevoss. Was it the, are they the Winklevoss twins? Winklevoss or Winklevoss twins? They have some sort of a clearinghouse. I think they put in like $100 million.
Good for them.
And I'm thinking, well, why would you put that much money? Maybe it was, why would you put that much money into your company unless it's ready to go belly up? Right? It's like, okay. It wasn't that they were reinvesting or buying the product. There was a clearinghouse, I think, for cryptos or something. But they put in this ton of money. And it's like, why? Because that's how dangerous these markets are. And that's what it probably needed to keep going, maybe to keep funding the money that people are taking out of it. I don't know. But something doesn't smell right. Anyway, let's touch on these because I think these are important, Dave, before we get to your specialty, Levity as Golden today. We want to make sure we get to that. Today, we have debt payments up 150% for poorest nation. External debt payments. It's going to average more than 16% of government revenue for the world's poorest countries this year. And here we go again, back to the 90s. This is the highest level since 1998. Now, this is according to Debt Justice, the UK group formerly known as Jubilee Debt Campaign. The group said that the figure is going to rise to 16.7% next year. That's an increase of more than 150% since 2011. The last time the debt burden was so high, world leaders introduced a debt relief plan that ultimately led to as much as 80% of debts being canceled for the most indebted poor nations. A lot of this also has a lot to do with our higher dollar too, Dave, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, Heidi Chow, who runs this group, says debt payments are reaching crisis levels in a number of countries. And she added that we urgently need fast and comprehensive debt relief schemes across all external creditors, including legislation in the UK and New York, to make private lenders take part in debt cancellation, certainly to raise some eyebrows. Sri Lanka, Laos, Pakistan, Zambia, and Dominica are among the world's most indebted countries. They have external debt payments that will take up more than 30% of their respective government revenue over the next 2 or 3 years, according to the World Bank. About half of that is due to private lenders, another 30% to multilateral institutions, 12% to Chinese public and private lenders, and 12% to other governments, including the United States.
You know, what I find interesting is how can they make legislation in the UK and New York to make private lenders take part?
I guess the UN, they're talking, and they're probably just talking about, you know, a Security Council resolution, probably be the entire body that would encourage private lenders to participate, maybe encourage the larger developed countries, the creditors, to encourage their participation in debt relief. There's no teeth, I believe, in anything that they would the UN would pass anyway.
Well, we hope not. And tomorrow we have the March inflation data. And of course, everybody's going to be looking towards the strong deflation forces seen last year reemerge in any notable way last month. There are some market observers say that the answer could lie in the extent to which moderating prices reflected in private sector data start to appear in the government's figures, and we certainly can trust those. Used car prices, one closely followed inflation proxy, have been rising in recent months. Oh, Dave, didn't they just change the equation on this?
The Manheim auto auction, yes, they did.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it benefits everyone, except, hey, the equations don't work anymore. You change them. So I find that interesting. So that report does come out tomorrow. Would you have anything you'd like to add to that, Dave?
No. Well, the only thing I'll say is that Survey of Economists expects overall inflation in the area of 5.2% in the 12 months through March. That'd be down from 6% annually in February. Mm. I'll see.
You know, they might bring that number down, but where are people actually seeing it? That's the question. Gasoline drop. Okay, good.
We'll talk about that in the third segment, inflation expectations.
Okay.
Some interesting data coming out from the Fed, the New York Fed.
Okay. Levity is golden, exercising. Do we have to, Dave?
Well, if you like longevity, the answer to that is yes, resounding. Age will surely slow us, but the severity isn't necessarily pre-baked. That's what Alan Cousins, a Colorado triathlon coach, discovered after studying decades of performance data from athletes of all ages. It's interesting stuff. Cousins found that the amount of fitness his athletes lost from getting a year older was roughly equivalent to the amount of fitness they gained from adding 1 hour per month, that's 15 minutes per week, of training to their existing routine. Outside Magazine calls it the Cousins immortality quotient. Information raises questions about how much we can control and possibly delay our body's aging. And it suggests that getting more exercise could pause the biological clock. Adding 1 hour per month of aerobic exercise to your routine every year piles up quickly. For example, they say after a decade of following this method, the extra 15 minutes of running per week would turn into an extra 2.5 hours per week. I'm not sure what is that in life.
I was going to say, for a lousy 2.5 hours.
Yeah, well, what the heck? 15 minutes.
Good. Bad. I don't have to exercise at all then.
Well, by pulling the results of more than a dozen other studies, one group reached an encouraging quantifiable conclusion. That is, only about half the fitness losses suffered by endurance athletes as they get older are attributable to the passage of time. The other half can be chalked up to reduced training. Now, the standard gauge of aerobic fitness is called VO2 max, which measures how quickly you're able to breathe oxygen into your lungs, pump it through your arteries, and use it to help fuel muscle contraction. It's expressed in milliliters of oxygen per kilogram of body weight per minute, speaking of mouthfuls. And in young adult, it typically hovers somewhere in the 40s. After age 25, though, it declines by about 10% each decade, dropping more quickly in our 60s and 70s. Now, the effects of ceasing training entirely, which is to say exercising or working out, seems to be similar in athletes of all ages. Your VO2 max begins to plummet within a few days of stopping exercise, and you might lose as much as 20% after 3 months. These losses are explained mostly by changes in how much blood your heart can pump in, with each beat. The good news, they say, is that the trend can be reversed fairly quickly when you resume training. Now, Swiss researchers found that 54% of variation in fitness loss by male endurance athletes was explained by differences in how much they trained, how long they trained. That number in women was 39%, meaning there are other factors at play with women. Overall, the data fit with the observation that athletes who keep training at a fairly constant level over the years lose about 5% per decade. That's half as much as the typical non-athlete. Cousins' view about what's required for long-term success is about lots of low-intensity exercises. Walking, a lot of walking, weight training, even stretching. You don't train less because you're getting old. You get old because skipping that long Sunday walk or run with your pals becomes a habit instead of a rare exception. As the inverse of the Nike slogan goes, just don't do it. Bottom line, if you want to freeze the biological clock from one birthday to the next, find a spare 15 minutes per week and fill it with more walking or running, lifting weights, etc. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
Well, 15 minutes isn't too bad. 15 minutes isn't too bad. Well, you know what I believe.
That's a week.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Awesome. What I believe, though, really, truly, is you just have to keep going, you know. And I don't even know. And I guess to some degree, that's what it's saying. I mean, for 15 minutes per week, you just have to keep doing things. You know, just don't sit. You know, you just don't stop. Because once you stop, that's and I can remember, you know, my family, it was always, you don't want to retire, because once you retire, you stop doing things. But now I hear people who have retired saying they can't believe they did all that they did because they're so busy now after they've retired that they don't know how they got everything done prior to. So it's good to keep going, keep moving. That's the key. Mortgage rate locks for second homes, they were down 52%. From pre-pandemic levels on a seasonally adjusted basis in March. Now, this is coming from a new report from Redfin. Redfin is the online real estate brokerage. Now, that's compared to a 13% decline for primary homes. The report said, add the recent increase in loan fees, inflation, shaky financial markets, the end of pandemic-related financial stimulus, and many companies calling workers back to the office, and it's simply a challenging time for most Americans to buy a vacation home. Second home rate locks fell to their lowest level since 2016 in February, and they remain nearly just as low in March. The drop in second home demand follows a meteoric rise during the pandemic home buying boom, and mortgage rate locks for second homes reached a peak of 89% in August of 2020. And you know what, Dave, I question this again, because we're looking at what the IMF is saying, what, we're going to build 1.6 of GDP, and I'm thinking, how does that even relate to the number of people employed? It doesn't. I mean, those numbers, it just doesn't equate. So those numbers employed that we see has to be people working two jobs. That's the only thing that makes sense. Maybe two or three jobs. Yes. So, and then you see this then you see this industry too coming undone. I mean, 1.6 is a pretty weak GDP.
Well, I mean, especially, you're looking at the typical second home being worth $465,000 last year.
Yeah.
Versus the $375 for a primary home.
Wow.
I mean, that's a lot of that's a lot of coinage.
Mm-hmm.
That's I guess with all that's going on, you know, there these ones who'd love, who fantasize about having a vacation home, figuring out, well, right now it's not a necessity. Not that they ever are. you know, second homes are less attractive when there's less time you spend in them. Reference to people getting back.
Is that music already?
It is.
Oh, my goodness. We'll have to get to this one later. Small businesses hurt by credit crunch. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Let's talk about what she had briefly mentioned before we hit the last break. Small businesses being hurt by the growing credit crunch. Borrowings was for small businesses was already constrained, I guess we can say, due to rising interest rates. Following the recent collapse of Silicon Valley and Signature Banks, some lenders, particularly the small and mid-sized banks that serve small businesses, may be forced to tighten credit further. Since they're seeing an outflow of deposits, which means they need to retain more capital. And banks are being more cautious in general due to the uncertainty about what's ahead. Economist Ray Keating at the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council said this: "It's hard to read how severe this is going to be, but it's certainly going to be significant. And when you look at how things play out, small businesses are hit the hardest." Now, according to the latest Biz2 Credit Small Business Lending Index, the approval rates of small business loan requests at big banks have fallen for 9 straight months. The larger banks approved just 14% of applications in February. That's down by half, 28%, 2 years ago, right before the pandemic was announced. Small banks granted about 20% of loan applications this February, but they were approving about half of all requests back then. Rohit Arora, who's CEO and co-founder of Biz2Credit, says that higher interest rates and slowing the economy means that small businesses, which we know is a big job creator and source of innovation in the economy, will be left in the lurch. He said it will be the small companies that suffer the most if this continues. Companies that have existing lines of credit are seeing interest rates increase. James Caron, who operates Flatirons Pharmaceuticals in Colorado, has seen rates increase for his line of credit that's about $150,000. Before the pandemic, the rate he was charged was 6.99%, but that went up to 10. Now it's 13 and on the verge of going to 14. Other potential lenders he's contacted have even higher rates. Now, credit crunch affects small businesses more than larger ones, he said, because smaller businesses have fewer levers they can pull to get financing. For example, they can't issue corporate bonds or have large reserves available to them, whereas large corporations, the multinationals, have multiple avenues, for them to secure reasonable rates for funding. One Oregon small business owner said, a lot of people will just have to put their dreams on hold. That's never a good thing. Well, here's a story that I wish Melody were here for. This is a big a pet peeve of hers, electric vehicles. Nearly half of Americans in a new poll say it's unlikely they'll purchase an EV as their next car, an electric vehicle, citing the lack of charging options and the high costs as the main barriers to going electric. The poll, which was conducted by the Energy Policy Institute at the University of Chicago and the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, found that 47% of adults say it's not likely they will buy an EV as their next car. Only 19% say it's very or extremely likely that they will purchase an EV. Next, nearly 80% of the public cite the lack of charging infrastructure as the primary reason for avoiding an EV right now. It's a concern that was consistent among residents from cities, suburbs, and rural areas. Jennifer Benz, who's deputy director of AP NORC, said, while there's plenty of interest in purchasing an electric vehicle, the high upfront cost of owning one and concerns about the country's charging infrastructure are barriers to more people driving them. Findings come as the Biden administration pushes to aggressively boost EV sales and transition the country to clean energy. The White House has set a goal that up to half of all new vehicle sales be electric by 2030. In 7 years to slash emissions and mitigate the effects of climate change. The White House in February said it wants to see at least 500,000 electric vehicle chargers in the country's roads by the end of the decade. It recently unveiled a series of initiatives, including commitments from companies that build and operate charging networks like Tesla, GM, Ford, and ChargePoint. Well, the results also come before the EPA this week is set to announce significant limits on tailpipe emissions that would require as much as 2/3 of all new vehicles sold in the U.S. by 2032 to be all electric. I'm sure that will not go over well with some members of Congress. The poll found that just 35% of Americans support setting stricter auto emissions to encourage automakers to increase EV sales, and only 27% support requiring that all new car sales be electric or hybrid by 2035. Interesting going on. Bear with me here. Tax day approaching this weekend. Most Americans will use their refund to bolster their finances amid continuing economic uncertainty, stock market volatility, and lingering high inflation. More than one-third of Americans are saving their tax refund this season, and 44% have earmarked the funds to pay off debt or bills. That's according to the CNBC Your Money Financial Confidence Survey that is conducted in partnership with Momentive. Sorry about that. A recent Bankrate survey also found that tax refunds are important to most Americans' financial situation, and that paying off debt and boosting savings are top priorities for the year. It's similar to past finding. As of March 31st, the IRS had issued nearly 63 million refunds with an average payment of $2,900. That's down about, what, 300 some compared to the same point in the filing season last. Now, last today, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. It features Doug Nolan's weekly Credit Bubble Bulletin blog and Apothecary's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought on vaccinations versus unvaccinated people, excuse me. Plus, there's Melody's weekly financial market update, my article on falling inflation expectations, which we alluded to last segment. Over the past several months, consumers' expectations of future inflation have been steadily falling, a sign perhaps that Americans had confidence in the Fed's war on prices recently. Courtney Brown, maybe not though, Courtney Brown and Neil Irwin, who say that changed last month, pointed out that for the first time in 6 months, median inflation expectations of everyday households in the year ahead rose. They increased, in fact, by a half percentage point, 4.7%, according to the New York Fed's latest survey of consumer expectations. The report comes as expectations for the level of price increases for everyday goods and services like food and gas, rent and medical care decreased in March after 2023's hotter than expected inflation reports. The March data suggests that the public now believes inflation won't fall quite as much as they've been anticipating. Brown and Irwin caution, however, that 1 month of new numbers doesn't necessarily mean that inflation expectations are, you know, becoming unanchored. But, they add, more readings of this kind could worry Fed officials. Median inflation expectations at the three-year ahead horizon ticked up by a tenth of a percentage point to 2.8, but they fell slightly by the same amount to 2.5% at the five-year look-ahead time frame. Consumers also pushed up expectations for household income growth and, for the first time since last fall, how much they plan to spend. Mean unemployment expectations, or the mean probability that the unemployment rate will be higher 1 year from now, increased by 1.3 percentage points to 40.7%. The average perceived probability of losing one's job over the next year decreased by 0.4 of a percentage point to 11.4%, but the average probability of voluntarily leaving one job declined by 1.5 percentage point to 19.3%. Now, the share of households reporting that it was more difficult to access credit compared to a year ago actually rose to the highest level in the survey's 10-year history. Notably, year-ahead expectations about households' financial situations also improved, with fewer expecting to be worse off and more expecting to be better off a year from now. Now, given distortions in our cosmic time warp, thanks to COVID, economic uncertainty, geopolitical volatility, war, some observers believe the labor market is showing shades of 2019. But Brown and Irwin say that understanding how now and 4 years ago are the same and different is key to grasping where things are likely to go from here. They write that the high water mark of the longest expansion in history was 2019, which includes a healthy job market with low inflation. The question now, they add, is whether the remainder of the year can keep the former while returning to the latter. They note these comparisons of 2019 versus the first quarter of 2023. First, headline unemployment rate, average of 3.7% in 2019, 3.5% so far this year. Average hourly earnings growth, 2.9 versus 3.2 this year. And the average share of 25 to 54-year-olds working, I think a significant data point, 80% then, 80.5% now, virtually the same. Fed Chair Jerome Powell has been dying for the economy to look like it did in 2019, and Friday's jobs report is basically like a real strong 2019 one. That's at least according to Peachtree Creek's investment, Connor Sen. The differences are important, too. Both job growth and labor force participation are generally a lot stronger today. The labor force has risen by almost 600,000 people a month so far this year, compared to 125,000 in 2019. In the same vein, job creation has been faster this year, averaging 345,000 a month versus 163,000 in 2019. And most importantly, the decent job growth and earnings in 2019 occurred in a synergy with much, much lower inflation. So rising wages actually translated into rising living standards. Not so much today. The question for the remainder of 2023, Brown and Irwin say, is how those differences resolve themselves. That is, how and how, if and when inflation comes down and the rate of job creation normalizes. If you're a betting man or woman, chances are you like the upcoming scenario. On one side is high inflation persisting, which would further put a crunch on Americans' buying power and lead to a yet more Fed tightening scheme with all the future pain that would entail, or perhaps some combination of tightening already in the system. Current Fed projections implicitly embrace this latter scenario, with the median policymaker seeing the headline jobless rate rising a full percentage point to 4.5% by year end. That's equivalent to 8.5% when you include discouraged job seekers. Now, as Melody mentioned, the CPI for March is due out tomorrow. Toward the end of the month, the Employment Cost Index promises a more updated look at wage growth and whether it's slowing the way last Friday's job report suggests. So as Brown and Irwin conclude, it took a pandemic to stop an 11-year bull cycle. If things turn cloudy in 2023, it will likely be a different culprit, i.e. the Fed. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you for staying with me and my long-windedness this last segment. I'll be back Thursday, Butch here tomorrow with Melody and Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks as always to our producer, Todd, and to your loyal listeners for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there and have a good evening. Bye-bye. If I got me on-